For December the 18th, 2020, we talk about Cyberpunk 2077, Myst VR, and we ask you about hard-hitting moments in games. Welcome to Level 353. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Jala Brendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one, welcome all. Week before Christmas. Welcome back, Jala. Welcome back, everybody. I said one and all. That already counted. Sorry, I'm kind of spinning my wheels. I'm a little bit distracted. My heater is broken. Or my furnace, rather.
Your heater?
No.
Your mouth is broken.
No, my yeeter is down at down at Clear Fork throwing kayaks into the water. My furnace is broken. My heater. The shit of this is my furnace broke down over the weekend. I have been sick. Okay. With symptoms that could plausibly be called COVID. I tested. I'm negative. It's fine. I was really, really fucking sick, but I'm doing okay now. You can hear the vim and vigor of my voice. But I'm still in quarantine until Thursday, in the middle of December. So I am living completely bundled up. I have an electric fireplace out in the living room where I'm sleeping. The kitties are gathered around that. The room is warm. It's like 68 degrees. It's fine, but I can't call a technician in because I'm under quarantine. And I'm back in my office right now and I'm very cold. I tried running a space heater to warm up the room, but it's only temporary. That's faded. Yeah, that's what's going on here.
Yay.
Yay.
only temporary, like our meaningless existence.
Well, you know, I mean, meaningless is up for interpretation, but yeah, that's what I got going on, and I got a kitty on my headrest here.
So what happened first, the fever or the furnace going out?
The fever.
All right.
Yes. The fever happened last Wednesday night. Going into Thursday, and then the heater went out. Yeah,
fever broke with the furnace.
Right. The heater went out. I think it was like on a Friday or Saturday night. Everything has kind of been a blur. So, I have an appointment on Thursday to get things fixed. But yeah, sucks. Anyway,
glad you don't have COVID though.
I know, right? Yeah. That's good. It was just something else that made me very ill. Yeah. I'm going to throw it to literally anybody else. Let's see here. Hey, Ben, how are you doing? Since you talked.
The most of what I've done this week will come up in what you've been playing section, I think.
Cool.
But I had friends in town, so that was nice. It was the same people I hung out with for Thanksgiving. So my pod is Cross City, I think. But cool. We went hiking over the weekend, so that was really nice.
That's good.
Yeah, it was like, usually I feel like I'm a pretty good hiker, but Portland people are intense, so I was like the weakest link of the trio, so.
Oh.
But it was nice.
You hate that. You hate when you feel like, when you feel them slowing down. Anybody, like when you're doing any group activity and somebody else is slowing down for you.
It's more, I kept pace. It's just I felt very, like when I got to the top, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it down or not. But the walk down was a lot easier than the walk up. So who would have thunk it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kept pace, but you weren't happy about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At some point, you thought about asking them to fashion you a travoy. But
I was really wanting, like, it's not, I was trying to think of the word of this and I didn't look it up. But is it a gondola, like a ski lift type thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Is that called a gondola, or am I just crazy?
Maybe gondola, funicular, something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, I wish it had that, but yeah. It was still great.
Oh, well, that's fun. Hiking's fun. Yeah. I need to go out to the woods.
Mm-hmm.
For an unrelated reason, I've just got some stuff out there I need to check on.
Mm-hmm.
Like
some stuff.
Some shacks.
Chop wood for a fire.
Some shacks and traps. Yeah. Jala, how about you? How are you doing?
Well, I had sympathy gunk. I don't sound it, but I got like sympathy sinus allergy infection thing. And even though I sound perfectly fine, my ears are all stuffed up and pained. And then also my lymph node underneath my arm just swelled up today. So it's apparently worse than it sounds. So that's exciting. So I'm going to be trying to rest as best I can, so that way I am, you know, recovered, because there is a workshop I want to do on Friday, and I obviously am not doing anything else this week until I am better. So, but unrelated to that, I caught that stupid onyx, guys.
You caught the onyx.
I caught the stupid onyx. I was talking in the green room about how I was playing Pokemon Sword and the stupid onyx. I spent like 30 balls on the thing, on like great balls and timer balls, and the sucker would not go in the stupid ball. And then I went back in there and did it again. And I ended up catching him the first time. I was so pissed, like happy, but pissed at the same time. Like, man.
Yeah. You were just talking about how you caught, or you were trying to catch the onyx. The second I hopped into the channel, you yelled louder than I've ever heard you yell, saying, I'm mad.
Well, I was actually having this conversation earlier today, that I don't get really, really mad about anything that is like greatly, like I'm very level-headed when it comes to anything super important that happens. And even usually if it's something minor, like the things don't really bug me unless, you know, like there's just a pile of them, but it's like the intermediate level frustrations, like spending the last 20 minutes trying to get the stupid Pokemon. Like, man, really? Seriously? Yeah. And that's inconsequential, but I was still pissed. So
that's still your time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. But I will say, I watched with my little small group of people who watch things on Friday nights. Mm-hmm. And we watched Digimon together, like the first episode and then the movie. And I'm sorry, Digimon are better than Pokemon, although Pokemon games, I think, overall are better than Digimon games. Like, there's only one Digimon game that I really like, but Pokemon kind of consistently has some good ones, so.
So are you talking about, you're talking about the Digimon creatures are better than Pokemon? Yeah.
Yes.
Pokemon are kind of just generally, I mean, they're the best when they're cute. I think that, like, when Pokemon try to be Digimon, like, when you get to, like, Gen 3 stuff, that just looks like, is that a mech? Like, what is that? I don't know what I'm looking at. That's when they get kind of shitty. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, is Pokemon mech?
There's just like weird designs when you get to like Sapphire and Pearl and stuff. Like, they just don't look very good. You know, they're not like, you know, cuteness isn't the sole factor, but you know what I mean? Just that it's like complicated, and it's like it's covered in armor and stuff. Like, it's not good. Just not good is what I mean.
This is going to be me probably missing the point, but how does Sapphire and Pearl, like, that?
No,
like it's, that mixes the yin, misses the whole yin yang thing.
No, those are different. Those are different generations. So it was Sapphire and Ruby is Gen 3, and then Gen 4 is Pearl and Diamond.
See, I feel like Pearl and Diamond, even, that's kind of...
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. It's what they said. It's what they did.
Did you want, like, a Pokemon clam, David?
There's several of those. There's Cloyster. There's...
Shelter.
Others.
So,
yeah.
I really want to see... sorry, maybe we should save the Pokemon talk for the grind, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, Jala will be talking a little bit about Pokemon. How are you doing, David?
You know, bobbing and weaving.
Of course.
Let's see here. I'm maybe moving back to Alabama temporarily.
Yeah, to get out of the city.
Yeah. I'm packing, but a great many of my possessions are either sharp, heavy, or pointy.
And my suggestion for you was to get a golf bag, because in the green room you said it was either long, sharp, or heavy. Yeah.
Right. So what I have always wanted to get is the hard side guitar case, like what's that movie, El Mariachi?
Yeah, get one of those. Guitar cases are good. They're easy to carry. I know it's probably not easy to carry more than two of them. I mean, maybe three if you strap one on your back.
Yeah, but you can put a lot of sharp, long, pointy, heavy things in a guitar case.
Yeah, and a lot of guitar cases will fit into a car, so that's good.
That's all I got.
No worries. Well, we wish you luck in making your decision on that. Yeah, no, I think we should do the regular kind of show. Keep things moving. Our little recorder broke down again. It disconnected. I might need to find something else, but we have the backup recording. It's fine, as long as, for God's sake, Dottie, get off the keyboard. Come on, laser pointer outside, and doors closed. Okay. But we've got the regular kind of show for you. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, or sorry, we have the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. Many years of habit die very hard. But why don't we get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, I'm going to you first, buddy. I know you got the new stuff for me.
Yeah, I've been playing Cyberpunk ever since Wednesday night.
Cool.
Yeah, what a interesting... Yeah, okay. Anyway, I downloaded it on, like, Wednesday during the day, Tuesday night. It took, like, 12 or 14 hours to download. It's, holy like, 100 shit. Gigs.
Wow.
So I think that included the 40-gig patch that I think we talked about last week. I think that was, like, the Day Zero patch. Playing it.
Are you? I'm sorry to interrupt you immediately. Are you playing it on PC or are you playing it on?
It on PS4 for anybody. If you know the news, you know it's coming.
Yikes, dude.
Yeah. So there will be mild spoilers about maybe the format of the game, but not any like story spoilers. So. Okay.
Yeah. No. I mean, I want to hear what the game is like. Yeah. Yeah.
So Wednesday night was mostly making the character and doing like intro type stuff. Character creator is pretty fun. It's pretty good. You get to pick genitals. It was not a slider. It was a discrete like amount that you can pick for like sizes and cuts of wieners.
It's a fucking steak. Okay.
Already disappointment. I wanted a continuous slider for my dong size.
Yeah.
And then the sad part, there's no customization for vagina. If you pick vagina, you just get
What?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
There are so many different sizes and shapes of lady parts. That's
I know.
Goodness. Come on. Yeah.
So, man. Missed opportunity. Okay. But I was happy that I could pick a male voice on a female body with a dick. So,
yeah.
I wanted to make it like completely futuristic where it's like that is normalized and no one cares, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that was fun. Character is a little bit jokerish, though. I had a green fro, which was sweet, but I kind of, once somebody said it looked like the Joker, I couldn't get that on my head. So.
Ooh, yeah.
But thankfully,
an accidental Joker.
You just don't need to see your character for the
core Joker. I was thinking like Mass Effect.
The one with brittle bones?
All the way.
Okay.
But for better or for worse, you don't really see your character for most of the game since it's first person. If you ride a motorcycle, then you see them. But then the different like clothing items that you have like cover up most of their bodies, so it doesn't matter too much. So for better or for worse.
Depending on the size of the penis you choose, it may clip outside of the clothing you wear. So
I saw that bug online. I did not get that bug. There's no discernible bulge in my pants, so I don't know. Aww, it's all just kind of a wash. Yeah. I think it's the GTA horse wiener situation where it's like, there's a lot of hype around it, but then it's kind of a small and inconsequential mechanic. There's no storyline missions that emphasize. No.
Okay.
Anyway. Character creation's fun. It's serviceable. People are doing fun things with it online, whatever. Then when you go to the character creation part, there's two different things you pick. One is your backstory. Similar to like Mass Effect, you have three different options for a backstory.
Right.
The options are Corpo. You work for corporation that's big and monolithic and kills people probably just for fun, or a nomad, which is kind of like a Mad Max situation, except like, you know, you're very like resourceful and kind of on your own, but there's also like this nomad clan situation.
People just for fun.
Yeah, I think that's the common thread. You can kill people just for fun, like no matter who you are in this game.
A lot
game.
Of killing people.
Yeah. And then the third option, it's a street kid. And I think it was like, they're like resourceful and street smart, but then I wasn't sure beyond that. Anyway, I picked Corpo. I thought that was the most appropriate for my current living situation.
Right.
Basically, all that determines, though, is it determines some dialogue options, which that feels meaningful. And that comes up pretty frequently to the point where it feels like you're getting something special with that. And it also determines, like, an intro to the game.
Okay.
There's, like, maybe a half an hour to hour, like, intro mission that you do.
It sounds like a Dragon Age, like, when you would pick an origin for your character and that, like, determine the first chapter that you went through.
Oh, shoot. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'll ask that later, about that later. Yeah, so that's basically all it's determined so far. I haven't seen much beyond that. But then the other thing you pick in character customization is a stat system of like where your ability points go and where your skill points go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's isomorphic to like Knights of the Old Republic, where it's like you have five instead of six abilities. There's space for a sixth one, though, so I'm curious if that gets unlocked at some point in the game. Because like in the menu, it's like spaced out as if there's six spots, but one of them's just blank in the bottom middle. I don't know. So it's either bad design or good design.
I've been reading the Cyberpunk 2077 or whatever the Cyberpunk Red, whatever the most recent source book that came out is.
Ooh.
But I've skipped it. I've not read the gameplay parts or the character parts. I've just been reading the world flavor parts. So I don't know what their five or six stat situation is.
Okay. And so this kind of comes up to my first minor complaint to the game. So the different abilities that you have, there's body, which is like how if you can like push down doors or like punch people. It's like strength. There's reflexes, which is like dexterity. There's cool, which is, I guess, kind of like charisma. But it like determines like crits and stuff in fighting. There's intelligence, which is intelligence, but that determines like your hacking ability on things.
Right.
And then there's one more which determines like it's called technical ability, which is kind of weird since intelligence is hacking focused.
Yeah.
But technical ability determines like if you can open doors or vents or things like that. I think it might be tangentially related to like sneaking ability a little bit.
Is it related to like your guns and stuff, or is it?
So that's kind of the first complaint, is all of these abilities are mostly related to fighting. The feats that you have are just upgrading abilities as fighting. There's a few points in the game where these abilities will come up where it's like, you might have a high intelligence. So you can be like, oh, you can't hack that. You got to do this or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's maybe as frequently as like the corporation things, but for some reason it feels like it's less valuable, or it feels like it's just doing less.
Yeah.
So that's like a minor complaint of the game. I think I've heard this from other people too, is it doesn't really feel like an RPG necessarily. It's kind of like similar to like Assassin's Creed or like Batman type game, where it's like the upgrades are kind of relegated just to the combat section, is largely what it feels like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not dissimilar from The Witcher, though, because like most of the things that you could invest in were like different specializations for combat, your poisons and alchemy, different kinds of like exercises you could use, things like that. There was only like one thing that you could invest in to like improve your persuasion too. So like this sounds like it's like less customizable or emergent than say like a Deus Ex would be, but kind of still in line with The Witcher.
Sure. Let me put it this way. So I maxed out my intelligence and maxed out all. I can hack people in combat, which just means like kill them from afar without them seeing you, similar to archery in Skyrim.
Yeah.
But I can't do anything with it outside of that. There's a few dialogue options, but there's not other ways to reward you of doing that, like being able to like go and hack terminals and stuff like that, like kind of randomly throughout the game. Actually, there is Sorry, there is one thing that you can do. You can hack terminals to get parts to upgrade your hacking abilities.
Yeah.
But again, it just only goes back to combat. There's not anything, not any like financials tied to it. Maybe there's ways I can like sell components that I haven't like stumbled into yet.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The comparison that I heard that I saw people make on Twitter were just everything is just wildly all over the place. We're in backlash and backlash the backlash, like it's useless to look there. But what I saw somebody say is that like it's more similar to like a looter shooter kind of thing than like a Skyrim or something like that would be.
So that was one thing I was thinking about as I was playing the game, is I'd remember like a lot of pre-reviews of it talking about like, oh, this game is like indescribable. It's like nothing you've ever seen. This shit is like science fiction GTA, and it's like, it is not far from that at all. It is very similar to like GTA 3 in that sense, and that's both like that's you know somewhat of a compliment to it.
Yeah, because it's like a good game. Like there are games like this.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, David. What were you gonna say?
My concern though is like. Sci-fi GTA may be a great game, but it's not cyberpunk. Like, are there any, you know, cyberpunk elements? Any?
Yeah. You know, I'm not like a master of the genre of cyberpunk, so I don't know if I can speak to that. But I guess my frame of reference is it Blade Runner-y? And there's a lot of like, or Judge Dreddy. And it's there's a lot of moments in the game that evoke that sort of same feeling of those two works.
Philosophy and politics and things like that.
Yeah. Like there's characters that you meet who are like, you know, higher ups in like these powerful organizations, similar to like the characters you like Blade Runner. And like that part's good. Like the writing in the game's pretty good and the characters are pretty good. And like the world building's pretty good. Yeah. Like some of the missions there's without spoiling anything, there's one mission where you deal with a certain AI that's really interesting because it shows like different directions that an AI could go in.
Hmm.
Like all that stuff is really fun. Let's get to the part that's not good about the game. That's like straight up bad about the game. In the first day and a half, the game crashed 7 times on me.
Oh my God. Really?
Boy.
Yeah. Like blue screen turned off. On top of that, I got into situations, at least 2 that I can think of where I had to reload the most recent save because I got in a situation where I could not get out of the situation I was in. One was I just jumped into a weird spot of the game and I like just got pinched and you couldn't move and like you couldn't like roll or get out of the situation. So, okay, whatever. The other one was I was driving to a bar, but I drove there faster than the textures could load. I was able to walk into the building because the barrier hadn't been loaded yet, but it loaded behind me after I had walked in the building. And so there was not a way for me to get out of the building. So that was a big bummer. And like, I could hear the characters talking outside the building, like the bouncers or whatever. And you have to like talk to them to let you in, but there was no way to like engage with them. So yeah. So that's the part that I guess most people are talking about and the part that's kind of bad. Like the game itself, has potential.
When it works.
Yeah. But like the big thing is like, yes, 7 game crashing bugs in like a day and a half is not something you just missed in like testing of a game.
No, no, it's actually kind of irresponsible to put out. Like,
yeah.
And
this kind of speaks to like probably the pressure they were under to anything.
My favorite thing that I saw about that was like, oh my gosh, all that crunch or all of this despite all that crunch, and somebody responded all of that because of all that crunch.
Yeah. So I'm not like upset if they release like a bad game is like, hey, we know this is shitty, we just need to get something out and we're gonna patch it like hell, which is what they're doing. But the thing that I don't like now is that they're like releasing messages where they're saying like, oh, we like overestimated or underestimated like the number of errors that were in the game or like something like that. Or we didn't know it was this bad or something like that. Or it's
I don't
buy that at all.
Yeah. That came up and you thought it would be cheaper to release it and fix it later. You were hoping that people would, I mean, honestly, they were hoping that people would do what they're doing, which is the people who are playing it on modern systems and people who are like big toxic fans of theirs go around and bully people who say, hey, there's probably a problem here, guys.
I mean, I haven't seen that. Is that Is that going on?
Yeah, it's happening. Like, it's happening mostly like Reddits and stuff like that. Yeah, there's definitely
forward lashing.
Yeah. There's definitely like a contingent where this comes up, and you know, people are dicks, specifically to women, which is fun.
To be fair, like, except maybe
that's a dangerous prediction. I was gonna say,
to be fair, like, all of that, like, corporations fucking things up and people being dicks to each other.
Yeah,
they're cyberpunk, right?
Yeah,
they're pulling the meta cyberpunk move.
Yeah, the next announcement they make is just the aristocrats. Yeah, it's...
So, and the other thing too is, like, since this game was originally targeted in April, like, PS4 had to have been like their target console, like, all the time. It's not like this is a surprise or like we have to release it for this old console. It was, you know, it's not that at all.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, so that part's upsetting and kind of confusing, and it's they're approaching No Man's Sky tier in terms of like developer responsibility and so that part's disappointing.
Their statement today, we're recording this on Tuesday, we generally record on Tuesdays, the most recent statement that I saw was something like, yeah, we took the wrong approach to the last gen system or whatever, like the wrong approach. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that you can just kind of say, and there's also like, you know, inconsistent return policies that they're putting out.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is going to fall on retail people. This is definitely going to fall badly on the team of people at CD Projekt Red around the holidays. Like, that sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, a lot of the things I've read have suggested or kind of talked about said for the last gen consoles, you know, things are so bad that there's legitimate questions. Can this be fixed?
Mm.
Miracles have been done. It's just a question of whether it's going to be worth it. Like, you know, I think that CD Projekt Red is terrified of Mass Effect Andromeda.
Hmm.
You know,
well, I mean, so it's everyone else.
Well, I mean,
it's terrifying on that.
No, but like Mass Effect Andromeda, like a serviceable Mass Effect style game that leans a little bit more action heavy, but like had a very bad launch with visual bugs specifically. Nothing approaching as like game breaking as what you're describing. And it has never gotten out from under that reputation. Right.
I see. Like,
I think that if they get that reputation, they've earned it, is the thing. And I think that they're terrified of handling it wrong, so they are just not handling it at all.
I want to bring up like a side tangential as well, because on the same date that Cyberpunk came out, the Avalanches released their third album.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it was a great album. And they never delayed the album coming out. They released a bunch of tracks ahead of time that weren't changed, you know, that were one to one with what the final product was. And it was like an abundance of content. It was like an hour long album. It's like got like 20 some tracks on it. It's great.
Nice.
So it was like a nice, it's like, oh, that's what, yeah. Well, I don't know.
That's what a product launch is. Okay, cool.
The older I get, the more I empathize with like the game. Like, I imagine
with the what? I'm sorry, you're kind of cutting out.
With the programmers of the game.
Yeah.
I imagine they were under a tremendous amount of pressure, both from like their bosses and from the fans and all that stuff. But you just have to be upfront, and like, if the game's not ready, it's just not ready.
Yeah.
You got to take like the Steam approach and not talk about the game until it's actually ready to be shipped. But that's definitely a luxury you can do, but they can do that because they've, you know, like, banked enough from The Witcher 3, I think.
Yeah.
But I feel like the problem is the people that can do that could have done that. Are the people that became billionaires from this. Like, the programmers, the people that suffer, don't have that call.
Right, yeah. Right. Oh, that's the thing. Yeah, like, you know.
All the programmers of The Witcher 3 got promoted to, like, managers.
I don't even know about the programmers. I have no idea what their structure is. But, like, you know, this game came out, what, midway through last week? And then... I think like earlier, it was like over the weekend, they put out a statement saying that they had already recouped the development costs. So like,
They put out a statement. I think they put out a statement saying that they recouped the development costs just with pre-orders for the game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
man, it's weird that people buy stuff ahead of time like that.
I mean, I did.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
But
how far ahead of time?
Like a week ahead of time.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't want to fall privy to like being in the cycle, the hype cycle, and being duped every time. But it's like, I don't know.
It was a big game, and people were talking a lot about it. Like it was, you know, I'm talking about it in the past tense. Like they could still fix it, and like there still could be fun stuff there. I haven't picked mine up again, quarantine. But like,
and I will say to the credit of the game, they released a patch after the first day and a half that I played. And it was like 17 gigs and I installed that and I did not have a crash since that point.
Oh, good. So yeah.
That is.
And they did, they did put out a patch fixing the sequence that was causing, epileptic seizures in some people. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's weird. It's, you know, it's cause they'll like talk in the past, you know, cause they like cited like the everyone cited quote of what, like a bad game lasts forever, a good game, whatever, you know, like that sort of thing. Delays.
Yeah. It's a Miyamoto quote. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, if they can fix all the stuff with patches, it's a bummer that they quoted that, but then did not follow that advice, I guess.
Yeah. Man.
But yeah, it's probably, oh, good.
I know. I feel like this is getting to like my news amp, but I feel like the issue isn't so much that they didn't live up to what they said, so much as potentially what it is that they explicitly cultivated that idea in order to trick people into pre-ordering it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the question is when does that stop being? When does that go from being just a regular marketing and PR practice and go into like, all right, we are creating our own version of this problem in order to hopefully solve a different problem, in order to give ourselves permission or space to release something that is not quite optimal. And by not quite optimal, I mean not functional on two of the systems that it shipped for.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of character are you playing? Not like visually, but like from a combat standpoint.
I'm just doing hacking. So I max out my intelligence. There's like a fun little hacking game you do, where you like put in a sequence of characters like from a grid and you have to follow these weird like abstract rules.
Cool.
And then people get caught on fire. So
nice. So you're like shorting out their implants. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, the thing is you do this from like really far away, and so they don't know you're there. So again, it's like archery in Skyrim.
You sounds like literal nerd sniping.
Yeah. You're just killing everyone from afar. It is like Skyrim in that you get experience points for things you do as you do them. So like I upgrade like my stealth and my hacking abilities as I do.
Nice.
But you can also upgrade abilities or like perks just through like leveling up too. So. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to picking up my PS5 copy. Hopefully the illness will have at least given me a reason not to play it before the patches and stuff come out, and I can have a good first impression with it. That'll be nice.
Oh, yeah.
I'll just have the luxury of having been massively dehydrated. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Anything else about Cyberpunk 2077, Ben?
Nah, that's all I got. I'm going to keep playing it, so we'll see. Yeah. Hopefully the game quality improves. So.
Cool. I imagine patches are going to be coming frequently.
I will say, one small thing I'll mention too is like in the last like days that I've been playing, the only glitches that I've seen are like UI glitches where like prompts will just remain on the screen like long after. You can kind of ignore that. It's not as bad as like the game crashing.
Visual jank. It's not making you lose progress.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to do mine because it is also new. It came out on the same day as yours. Mine is Myst VR. Okay.
Oh, how's that?
It's really neat. So this is a release on the Oculus Quest, so you can play it just on the headset, not plugged in, just kind of like free roaming in your office within the little boundary you set up. And boy, oh boy, is it virtual reality Myst. I dig it. Like, it's really neat walking around and being in that environment and like looking at stuff. You know, I've got basically that whole game internalized. So, you know, I'm not really there to solve the... God damn it, Greta. Come on. Or not Greta, Dottie. Sorry, I'm turning on my mom. I can't...
Whichever one you are.
Hey, hey. Oh, boy. No, she's not responding to the laser pointer. All right, honey. Hey, hey. Here you go. Here you go. Oh, no. You're going to, you know, back down, back down. There you are. Okay. Go. Go. Go on, get. Go on.
That's kind of awesome to listen to.
Hey, yeah, I like that he talks to his cat the way you try to talk down someone with a gun.
Okay, now they're out.
You call them honey? That's a thing that you do?
Okay, they're back. Sorry. Dottie was literally laying across the keyboard like a loaf of bread. Just, this is roughly the shape of my body when I'm laying down, so I'm going to lay on it. I'm not cutting any of that out.
No, don't, because it was too good.
No. So I've internalized most of this game, and I'm not really playing it to solve the puzzles, because I can just input the solutions. It's fine. But like, it's super cool to go around. So you are you can do free roam. You can move your character around. I prefer to do the kind of like node to node movement, where you just kind of point at the ground where you want to go, and rotate the thumbstick to, you know, point the way that you want to point, which is fine. But yeah, like I went into the Selenetic age, I went to the Stone Ship age, and had a grand old time solving those puzzles and being in those cool spaces. Visually and auditorially, it matches. Like, it looks really good to be in those spaces. I guess it would look better if I was on an Oculus Quest 2. I've seen some footage of it being a little bit higher res, but for right now, just kind of being in this cool, spooky, lonely space that has been one of my favorite places in video games for coming up on, you know, 25 years or so now. it's good enough for me.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Is there a cat scratching at your door right now?
There is. So I popped the... This has been a disaster. I popped the door so that she'll be coming back in. Hopefully she will have learned.
The real question is, do you deserve it?
Maybe. Oh, come on.
Don't shut love out, Cole.
Oh, yeah.
Let it lie on your computer.
I opened the door partway. She didn't think the door was open enough, so she kept scratching at it, and then I had to open it the rest of the way for her. Wow. Ridiculous. ridiculous animals. Good.
Sounds like a cat to me.
Yeah, you also have to lock them out of the room when you do VR, because they get very curious and like walk alongside you, and you do not want to step on them. Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be bad. So, but yeah, it's missed. It's in VR. It's exactly what it was advertised, and I love it. It's great. I wish I had more interesting things to say about it, but it's a, you know, it's a 27-year-old game.
All right, I have a question. Is there another game besides Myst VR that has a higher average letter score in Scrabble?
I don't know. Qbert? No, that has an E in it.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess the S and T are kind of weighing you down a little bit.
Yeah, just a skosh. I don't know. Yeah, I think there is like a game called like XZXY or something like that. Oh, Zaxxon probably. The arcade game Zaxxon.
And VVVVVVV probably is pretty good. All right.
Yeah. Okay. There we are. That's all that I have is Myst VR. Jala, how about you?
Yeah, so I have been playing Pokemon Sword. I beat the second gym, the water gym. Ivysaur went in and banged up the whole place by himself.
Cool.
Wrecked everybody in the entire gym single-handedly, so that was fun.
You know who would have had a hard time doing that? Charmander.
Maybe like Squirtle.
Charmander would have a rough time.
Not, Charmander would. Charizard would be easy, though.
No, Charizard's still water type, bud.
It doesn't matter, dude.
Charizard's stats are not that much like higher than the other. I think the Bulbasaur was right in the pocket for this one. Sorry, continue. I just wanted to score some points.
Of course. So I also beat Clara on the Isle of Armor and got this special Pokemon Kubfu, which I severely dislike because it's like a little bear that makes a baby noise when it comes out. And it has like a little headband thing on because it's kind of trying to be Ryu. And it's like, I hate this Pokemon. I hate it. But anyway, now I can get level 30 Pokemon, which means that I get the areas I've already gone to and try to recapture everything, such as Onix, because now I can capture that sucker and the ghost Pokemon around the Watchtower and so on.
Nice.
So that's like the only thing I have to say about Pokemon Sword, because it's a Pokemon game.
So the main game takes place, it's like Scotland, right? Is that what Pokemon Sword and Shield is modeled after?
I don't know.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Each of the regions is modeled after a real life country.
A lot of effort that just does not come through.
One of the recent regions is modeled after Scotland, but I may be incorrect. I was going to ask what the DLC area is modeled after, but I don't
the
know
Isle
that I would
of
get
Armor,
an answer.
I don't know. Yeah. It's got like a dojo. it is in like on the Isle of Armor, it's got, you know, like a forest and a cave area that has a desert inside of it for some reason, and just a bunch of random, you know, areas with different types of environments that, you know, wouldn't actually all be on the same island, but like it's Pokemon, so
it's a video game island.
So that's all I got about that. I played a little bit more Resident Evil 5. I finished 5-3 with Dave. And like, we stopped again after we finished 5-3, which is where you fight all of the, what is it, lickers and stuff that crawl up the walls.
Oh,
and
then God, I hate that place. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have to fight Wesker and Jill. The Wesker and Jill fight is there. And then like right after that, then it goes to the ship. And that's where we stopped because I was there's only like at the end of the game, it turns into kind of like a battle of attrition and just like frustrating parts. I think that's one of those parts, if I remember correctly, where it's just like corridor shootery and there's like a bunch of dudes that have grenades and stuff and guns, and it's just irritating. So it's like, I don't have enough patience for that right now. We'll have to take a break again before we go and finish it. So we're slowing way the hell down with that game. But
yeah.
Well, so I don't have anything new to say about that other than that that's where we are. But I did play a very interesting game called Night Call. So Night Call is a non-linear, narrative-driven noir murder mystery where you play a cab driver in Paris who was attacked by a serial killer and managed to survive. When you recover, you're drafted by the police to become an information gatherer for them. And they also, like the detective that works with you, also gives you some information about the suspects so you can kind of get information about those people from people who enter your cab and just your connections, because everybody knows who you are as a cab driver.
Right.
And then also sometimes they actually are people that you can pick up and give, you know, a ride to as well. So, you know, you can actually have them direct contact with them,
with the killer.
Information. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So you gather clues, of course, like I said, from getting to know your patrons and helping them to solve their problems or opening up. You can listen to gossip, read newspapers, and all of that. Like I said, you can even have direct contact with the suspects. I think it's 5 or 6 suspects, and one of them is guilty. And what the game reminds you of at the very beginning is it's not who has the most evidence against them, it's the one that has the most compelling evidence against them. So when I played through, there's 3 different scenarios. It's like, okay, the setup is the same where you are attacked by a serial killer, but the cases are different. Like who the killer is, what their motives are, who the suspects are different for the three different scenarios that they offer you. Yeah. And you get to pick between them. And you know, pick which one you want to do. Like I'm going to do a replay on the other two because they have different murderers. Some of the suspects actually are in more than one of these scenarios, so you may, you know, like they may be innocent the next time, you know, or something like that.
Yeah,
that kind of a thing. Huh. So you work a night shift as cabbie, and you have the option to select which fares you accept or decline. So it's like a map of Paris pops up with a little icon showing you like the face of whoever it is that's asking for, you know, a cab at different places, and you get to pick where to go. You also have a gas meter and a money meter, and you have the cost for the cab company deducted at the end of each night, along with any of your other expenses, like if you fill up your tank, if you buy things, if you pay somebody for information, all of that comes out at the end of the night.
No.
I did not run out of money. I do not know if that is possible. I played on regular mode, but I was like working steadily. So, you know, like I don't think it's necessarily like a big concern.
It's not like Papers, Please, where your family members can die if you can't afford medicine.
It doesn't seem like that's, you know, something that they're wanting you to bother with, because they really want you to focus on the patrons and the problems you're trying to solve, and how you're going to get the clues to figure out who the killer is.
Right.
You do also on the map have gas stations you can go to where you can fill up your tank, but you can also talk to the clerk, who will often give you clues because they hear things, or because they've picked up something from the news or whatever, and they tell you information. You can also buy a lottery ticket, and you can only buy one a night, but you can buy a lottery ticket and possibly win some more money. I did not win.
No.
Can you also go to the gas station bathroom and find like a mystery number on the wall that you can call and ask for information? Or
no, that's not a thing. But there are other information nodes that pop up on your map where you can basically talk to connections that you have, either because you know the people and they are doing you a favor, or because they are an informant who you can pay for some information. Mm-hmm. And so you can also go there to pick up extra clues. And you definitely want to make sure to hit all of those points whenever you see them show up on the map. So after your shift is over, you return to your studio apartment and have the option of reading through the case files and other information you receive. And, you know, you can review your pegboard, which shows each of the suspects in each clue and links up the clues to the suspects as to, you know, which one is pertinent to which of the suspects. And there is a time meter. So like, you know, depending upon how big the case files are and stuff, it might take you quite a long time to read it. And then you maybe don't get to all of the case files that evening, or you don't get enough sleep. And I don't know if that actually is a factor, but at the beginning of the game, during the kind of very brief tutorial thing, your boss tells you that you need to be well rested in order for people to open up to you. So I don't know if that actually affects meters, or if they're just telling you that for, you know, to get you to think that.
Right.
I couldn't tell if that was a noticeable difference. I would have to basically burn all my time every night and then just see what happens, you know? But so it takes about 4 hours to finish one of the different scenarios. And this game is basically an absolute delight to play, because every character that you run across is very complex and has a number of different things going on with them that influences their behavior and their decisions, from the protagonist to on outward to the killer, the detective that roped you into helping with the case, and every single cab patron. Mm-hmm. The people that you ferry around can be absolutely anyone and anything.
What?
There's Santa Claus. There is an alien trying to understand what humanity is doing. There is a robot who stole the data about her creation and is disappearing with it, so she and her kind do not render humanity obsolete. There are some kids that are trying to finish a tabletop campaign, and like they just got kicked out of their friend's house right at the end of the like the last fight, and they ask you to play his character just so they could finish their campaign. So you can like do the role playing and try to finish the campaign with them.
Roll for persuasion, kids.
There is a student going on a trip to journal the harrowing journey of the Syrian refugees because she played Bury Me My Love.
Oh, another game by this yeah. studio? Okay.
I don't know if it's by the same people, but yeah, that's a reference thing. Someone from the future is trying to warn you of imminent danger from some kind of a source, kind of like that thing that happened in Dark Knights with Poe and Monroe.
Okay.
There's a man who's jinxed and causes mishaps to happen all around him. There's like a Japanese dude who, like, if you happen to speak English to him, he will switch to English. Otherwise, he is just literally talking in Japanese the whole time, and you have no idea what he's saying unless you can read Japanese. Anyway, it's very, very fun. All of the characters and the scenarios that you encounter are interesting, and not all of them lead you to clues. Some of them are just like people you're helping out that are just going about their day,
yeah.
You know, and it's kind of an interesting that way because like it gives you a real look at a variety of different aspects of humanity. Like there's all different types of people represented, as well as ridiculous characters who, you know, kind of take a look in on like a window of humanity and, you know, interact with this cab driver, and it's like super surreal, and, you know, they're just kind of for the commentary's sake, I think.
Yeah.
And for the reflective aspects. So I would say that this is really fun, and I would recommend people try it out if this sounds at all interesting to you, because it is quite an interesting game, and I don't feel like I've spent enough time with it in one playthrough of one of the scenarios, so I will be proceeding to play the other scenarios as well.
So anybody listening who is curious which one this is different than NeoCab, which is another cab-based visual novel. NeoCab, that one is explicitly like futuristic cyberpunk. This one is the black and white magical realism one. Both of those games came out around the same time, and I believe they were announced at the same like E3 PC games show, like basically back to back. So there's a little bit of Armageddon Deep Impact thing going on.
We got cab games here.
Yeah, cab games, two for one. Yeah, I know nothing about NeoCab aside from the premise, but just in case anybody else was initially confused as I was, because you weren't talking about the cyberpunk.
Nope, this is Nightcall, and it is quite a different thing. It is quite fun. I recommend.
That's cool. I didn't realize it was a mystery game.
Uh huh. Yep.
Yeah. I dig it. Is it tense at all? Like wondering if the person that you're talking to could be the person who tried to kill you?
Well, there are, at least when I played through, there are a couple of times where it's kind of a tense thing, and depending, like you can, the game plays out over six nights, and on the sixth night, you have to pick who is this, you know, which suspect is who you think the killer is based on what you have learned. And this is who you suggest to the detective. Mm-hmm. And the detective will take this and, you know, go to her superiors or whatever. And if you are wrong, bad things happen. And that's the end of that at day six. Yeah. If you are right, you get roped into helping lure the killer in. And yes, that gets very tense.
Hmm.
Wait, so are you not armed?
It's Paris.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's like pretty basic, though.
You're armed with a deep knowledge of the cinema.
Oh, gosh.
That seems a little unrealistic.
Well, you know, the cops just want their guy. They don't care if the bait gets got.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that sounds cool. You make a good case for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nice. David, how about you? Or, I'm sorry, was that all you had, Jala? Sorry.
Oh yeah, that's it.
Cool. I know that was the last game on the list that you sent over. So. Mm-hmm. David, how about you?
Yeah, I'm continuing to be Neo one step at a time.
Cool.
Slowly helping Nobunaga conquer Japan.
This is Neo 2.
Neo 2.
And, yes, and you're working with Nobunaga. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's actually kind of interesting, whereas the first game, I don't know, it had a plot that was something like, this is much more explicitly like you're a dude in Nobunaga's army,
mm-hmm.
and inexplicably, like, everything that he needs done basically boils down to kill yokai.
Right, right.
Which is a little weird, but
they're mischievous, you know, and they have their hands in many human affairs. So
yeah, I mean, you know, and you know, it just so happens that apparently every ancient Japanese general had magical powers. So,
right.
As you do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're much more like fighting. Fighting these various battlefields, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually kind of interesting because at the beginning of each mission, they tell you like the location it takes place in and the year. And so, like, theoretically, from the start of the game so far, something like 15 years have passed.
Oh, weird.
I think I'm somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe halfway through, which suggests that like this game is going to be like something like 30 years long, and so far no one has aged.
Yeah, that's the answer. Yeah,
I mean, if all the generals have magic.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess that's fair. That's fair.
Aging's the first things you solve when you're dealing with demons.
True. Yeah. Good point. I guess if you have like demon powers mainly, maybe that, maybe demon blood is a good moisturizer. I don't know. But I don't know. Kind of interesting. There is some weird thing. There's a faction of like anti-demon ninjas that are all run around with like Bloodborne style sides, like flip out sides fighting things.
Cool.
Which is kind of cool, although it is a little weird that like one of your allies that joins you like after the first mission is a member of the this organization. And just made it to halfway and your characters, explicitly find out that she's a member of this organization and are shocked despite the fact that, like, up to this point, she literally dresses in, like, clothing made out of yokai bones, has a giant scythe, and, like, spends all of her time fighting demons. And everyone's, like, shocked, like, wait, you mean she was part of that group?
With her particular energy? Knocked me over with a feather. Yeah.
So, I also just got done fighting one of the bosses that is, or like, so every so often they'll have missions that are just straight up like you fighting a duel, just because. And so I just got done fighting the Obsidian Samurai, which is the true to history, like African guy that came over as an assistant to a missionary and then became a samurai.
Yeah. I think he factored into the first game.
Oh, does he?
So I'm very curious if this is running alongside what's happening in the first one, because like Nobunaga's in the first game as well.
Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, I think. So I know in the expansions you meet was it William or Wilhelm or whatever?
Right.
People like that. However, I think the expansions also involve time travel. So it's not entirely, it's not entirely clear to me, like, where the timeline syncs up.
Yeah. And just because it was on the tip of my tongue, that samurai was named Yasuke.
Okay.
Yeah. Famous dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So, other than that, I don't know. I'm not sure that there's anything super noteworthy about this. I'm pretty much just kind of continuing on that.
Any cool new weapons?
Got some tonfas made out of demon bones.
That'll do the trick.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so one of the new additions is what they call yokai weapons, which are basically like weapons that are possessed by spirits, usually, I guess, ostensibly evil, although it's kind of ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And as you fight and like gain souls or whatever they call it, they will build up charge, and then once they get to max charge, they'll temporarily deal more damage. And when they do that, they'll actually like have a couple of lines of dialogue to you that tell their storyline.
Okay.
Of like how they came to be possessed, that sort of thing. So like the weapons I just got were basically some like master craftsman decided, you know, like made these beautiful weapons, and like they're his life's work. And they're so nice that like some spirit decided like, hey, this would make a good home.
Yeah.
And so the shogun like demanded that he had to like chuck them in the ocean, and so the guy committed seppuku.
Hmm.
And so yeah, I know, just
it's a cool way to get short stories through equipment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, I go on.
No, I just said nice.
Yeah, yeah. So other than that, yeah, pretty much just samurai choppy choppy.
Hmm. Or smashy smashy in regards to what tonfa are. Ben in the chat, that was a little the notification sound that came through, said today I learned what a tonfa is.
Just gonna out me like that on the podcast, Cole?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want. Really, it's the look up MISOK, MAISOK.
Okay.
Which are the Thai version that's basically kind of like tonfas combined with shields.
Oh, huh. I feel like I've seen those in something. But every weapon's been everywhere.
I saw some a couple weeks ago, so that might be. But yeah.
I don't know that those are the ones I'm thinking of, but.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's one of those weapons that almost every nation in Southeast Asia had some version of it.
But... seems practical. You want to protect your forearms.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So other than that, started a Dungeons & Dragons campaign.
Oh, yeah.
Some friends. Cool. So that's been kind of fun. It's a little bit interesting. It's sort of a kind of 80s like glam punk type of setting, so very very focused on like I don't know, synthwave aesthetic by way of psionics.
Okay. What setting, what system?
It's just a homebrew setting.
Okay.
But very very urban, so you know it's explicitly the, you know, everything takes place in the city and all the characters are members of a thieves guild.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so we have a rogue that thinks she's a bard.
Okay.
We have a Oliver Twist style urchin that is completely mute and communicates entirely via like empathy.
Okay.
And I wanted to do the kind of the you know, boy raised by wolves type of character.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's a urban setting, so I am a person who was raised by kobolds.
Okay. Kobolds are cool.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed, I got permission to take this is like 3.5 edition, kobolds can get a racial feat that allows them to sneak while running or charging.
Oh, geez, that sounds really overpowered if you're not a tiny little kobold.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it's basically, stealthy for certain definitions of stealthy.
Surprising, let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Well, especially since then, with psionic powers, I have the ability to literally, like, run up walls and slide at, along the ground at twice my movement speed.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so you can scoot.
Are you fucking
kidding me? Oh my god. This cat, sorry. I'm going to take a picture of how brazen she's being. Sorry. I'll send this in.
She's just being a cat, Cole.
I know, but it's like, it's really fucking blatant. I'll share the picture.
Blatantly being a cat all up in your business. Oh my god.
An overabundance of catitude.
Yeah.
Oh god. No, that was the worst. That was the worst dad joke.
I don't care for that. I don't care for that one bit.
Edit that out. Yeah.
No, but that's cool. It's cool you got tabletop going.
You being a stand-in dentist, David.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh geez. Nice. So is this your some of your martial arts friends or people from work?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Are these Alabama friends?
Yep.
Are you moving to Alabama so you can be in the D&D campaign?
No, not why I'm moving to Alabama, but it does help.
Well, let us know when you're on the level to tell us that you're moving to Alabama to be in the D&D group.
look in the Slack, you guys.
Oh, shit. Yeah, dude, your last picture was so cute too. Damn.
Yeah,
that's a look of defiance.
She's
that's
literally
a look like you think that you own this keyboard. LOL.
I mean, I know that I'm literally just talking about how like a cat is acting, and that's dumb. But she's literally standing right on. She's doing it again. Come on,
Cole, you got to get the fake out keyboard. You got to get the two keyboards.
I do. And
the one that's prominently displayed but it's turned off.
Yeah,
and the one
yeah.
that's like underneath that you're actually typing on.
So is the spritzer bottle considered inhumane now?
I don't like doing it. I've only done it like once or twice when she's gotten into cables and I couldn't get her out.
Okay, that was like ours, except that our cat was just kind of a dick and would just like stand there and kind of squint its eyes at you and just like refuse to move.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And now she's laying across the keyboard, so I'm gonna get a picture of that. And
on the plus side, if she does it enough, she will type Shakespeare.
Yeah, or she will stop the recording if I have that window foregrounded. So I apologize for interrupting your chat, David. I will solve this problem in between segments. Did you have anything else?
Nope. That's it.
Cool. That sounds like a segment to me.
So that you can go take care of your business.
Yeah, so I can take care of this cat. She really needs to go. Hey, girl. Hey.
Does she not play with Greta?
I think she's bored of playing with Greta.
Greta doesn't have enough pep for her.
Right.
I'm kind of shocked that she abandoned the space heater thing.
Yeah, no, the company was more important to her. Here. I disgusting.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what did you ask the nice people?
I asked the nice people what game moment hit them the hardest. what got him right in the feels.
And you shared a photograph from a photograph. You shared a screen cap from Final Fantasy X for this. Gonna put a blanket spoiler warning on this one. People are doing pretty good at being vague about stuff that happens, but you never know. We're talking about heightened stuff, so you'll know what to avoid here. Going to start with Austin, who says, in recent memory, it was the end of the Breath of the Wild. Seeing all of my dead friends come back to take the world gave me strong Lord of the Rings vibes. The scene really gave me the same emotions as when Sam picks up Frodo at the bottom of Mount Doom and carried him. And I totally didn't cry on stream. Yeah. No, good stuff. I don't like any of the Lord of the Rings movies really that much, except for Return of the King. And when I think about anything related to the back half of that movie, I start getting weepy. So I'm going to move on from that. David, what does Jarrus say?
Jarrus says, not a lot of games resonate with me emotionally, but I remember being really touched by the ending of Transistor. That whole game connected with me in a way I can't explain, and the ending was really beautiful.
It's a good game. Yeah, everybody's talking about Hades, which is good because that means generally people are talking about Supergiant games. And Transistor, I think, is my favorite one of those. So, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ben, what does Sean say?
Sean says the game Arise, a simple story, has so many impactful and beautiful moments, but at the end of the level titled Fruit is a gut-wrenching moment that had me in tears. I really advise people to give this gorgeous game a go, and if it doesn't make you cry, you're probably dead inside. Ha!
that's the one, Roman Gladiator game with all the QuickTime events, right?
No, you're thinking of Rise, R-Y-S-E. No, this is Arise. This is a different one. I think so, anyway.
Yeah.
Now you've got me guessing.
I hadn't heard of it before.
Hmm.
It looks like Rip Van Winkle-ish, but then in a fantasy world.
Yeah. Don't know. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, this is a hard one to answer. There are many great emotion beats in games. I'll pick one that surprised me most. In Mass Effect 3, there's a chance to help Miranda with a personal quest. By accident, while playing it, I picked the option to turn her down, and then she starts crying some, although doing her best to hide it. Right away, I had to reload and pick again, despite losing gameplay, because just like in real life, I can't stand to see a girl cry.
That's I think that's notable for her character, too, because she's like engineered to be perfect and not have emotions and stuff like that. Yeah. There's good stuff in Mass Effect 3. All of this, Mass Effect being kind of back in the news has made me wish I had the time and inclination to go back and play that series again, because I don't know, it's been a while, and I want to give Mass Effect 3 another shot. Anyway, Stuart writes, with Nier Automata spoilers, there have been a lot, but a big one was 2B's death. Stumbling across the game world while your system slowly corrupts after being betrayed by Yorha, the organization in the game, and snatching away any hope at the end, it was a lot. I pushed on and finished all the major endings, but the experience stuck with me for a few days after. Yeah, that's a shit ending to get. It's not fun. Yeah, David, what does Noah say?
Sorry, I was confused for a second because it's the same game.
Yeah, yeah.
The most impactful moment for me was easily the final choice in Nier Automata between fighting as A2 or 9S, because they suck at naming things. Sorry, that was my commentary. I put my controller down and stared at the screen for a long time. When humanity is already extinct, it's hard to decide what is worth fighting for.
Yeah. Agreed. Jala, what does David say?
David says, Mass Effect 3 was already mentioned, so I'll go further back to the end of the first chapter of Tactics Ogre. Cole can explain this further, but the choice to do an evil action in order to follow the law or take no action and be branded a chaotic outlaw, first real moral dilemma I had in gaming.
Yeah, that's a big one. Basically, you are given a chance. You are ordered in this, you know, medieval political strategy game to slaughter basically an entire orphanage. Basically, you're told to commit a war crime. It's not an orphanage. Like, you're to slaughter a whole house full of refugees in order to pin it on kind of the empire, basically, in the game. And, you know, refusing to do that is actually like the chaotic thing. I think that regardless of what you do, like, you are not the person who ends up taking the action. But it is still a lot. Like, do we do this for a basically a moral victory that we can, you know, rally, basically do a false flag thing to get the army to rally around us for? Or do we stand by our principles and not kill our own countrymen in order to make that happen? It's a little bit more, has a little bit more shade than I'm putting on it in the game. I firmly take a stand of not killing refugees.
Bold stance, Cole.
Yeah. But it has a big impact on the middle of the game. Yeah. Ben, what does Jack say?
Jack says, unconsciously dialogue a long string of numbers to talk to my ex on the phone at Disco Elysium. Oh, spoilers for that game. Got me in such a major way. I was traveling alone for the third time that year, holed up in a small room, and I had rented for PRGE. And as the new common duck feed slang goes, sleeving this game in the post-expo hours. Seeing that painful yearning committed to text and sound resonated in the most real way, the real way a game ever has for me.
Yeah, Disco Elysium will be mine for a different moment, but yeah, that is a powerful one.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I'll read the last one here. Dave says, the game moment that hit me the hardest in recent memory would be from Nier Automata. Several moments, really, as that game deals almost wholly in tragic stories for not only the main cast, but for practically every NPC you encounter. From philosophical machine life forms to androids given a very manipulated purpose to exist, the player forms attachments to these characters by and large through the narrative and fantastic dialogue. But those attachments are, more often than not, used as emotional manipulations as one progresses through the game. Taken as a whole, there is a pathos and perhaps catharsis to be found through the game's dozens of endings, all well worth experiencing firsthand. Sorry. Dottie got back in. Oh, God. Oh, God. She kept on. Oh, she almost logged me out of the computer, you guys. Sorry.
Oh,
and she closed my browser window. Okay. Sorry.
Well, it's a good thing you didn't need that anymore.
Yeah. She closed a bunch of my browser windows, actually. Huh. Okay, that's fine.
She's helping you disconnect from the web poll.
I guess she is. Anyway.
It's really your problem, not hers.
Yeah, it's my problem, not hers. Sorry. It's getting unprofessional. yeah. No, but three votes for Nier Automata. I need to finish that game.
Apparently, you do.
If I finish that game, I mean the several endings I've not already done.
Yeah.
Let me think here. Mine would be Disco Elysium. The conversation you can have, let's say, with the non-human at the end. Basically, where a lot of basically theses about the game. And humanity in general come through. It is just the presentation in both text and sound, specifically the music, is extremely touching in a way that like drives specifically at ideas and feelings that I have about kind of like faith and humanity in a way, like just this kind of bittersweet, tragic way that it's that it's shown there, that shows that for God's sake, there is hope as long as you don't forget, you know, that thing, you know, things matter.
About the conversation with the ultra rich man.
Yeah, no, I'm not thinking about the guy is so rich that light doesn't bounce off of him. Yeah,
yep.
No. I'm talking about the bug.
I was moved to a bigger house.
Said the quiet part loud. Yeah. Disco Elysium. Yeah, I'm really excited about that. I might change my story actually because I'm more excited about that than what I posted earlier. So let's see here. David, how about you?
I think the game that hit me the hardest, probably Punch-Out. No, I don't know, like, emotional stuff in games is generally not the type of games I play.
Right.
I guess maybe, Spec Ops The Line.
I was about to say, probably Spec Ops, right?
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense to me. Spec Ops, anyway. Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I'll go with Walking Dead Season 1.
Yeah, that'll get you.
Might not be the latest that I've cried at a piece of media, but probably the hardest.
Yeah. Makes sense. That even hit me a little bit when I streamed it recently. It's hard not to be invested. Jala, how about you?
Well, for me, I've talked about it a bunch of times before, but the false ending of Lunar Eternal Blue is probably the thing that hit me the most, because at the time, I'd moved to Houston from Miami and my family was all split up. All of my friends were in Florida and I was mostly alone. So I basically was playing the game and all of the characters became my best friends because I was like in middle school and alone in a new place. And I became really emotionally involved. So at the false ending, Lucia, the female lead, returns to the Blue Star to continue watching over it, as is her duty, leaving Hero, the male lead, who is in love with her, to be alone on Lunar, pining for her. Mm. And, like, it goes through all the credits and ends, and then I was just devastated. And then there was an epilogue that didn't automatically start after that false ending. So I was sobbing over this for like a week before I finally was like, I'm going to play it again. Maybe there's something else. And then like I loaded it up and then there was an epilogue option in the menu. And I was simultaneously really pissed, but also really happy at the same time.
Yeah.
So
you're manipulated, but your friends get to be together.
Yeah, well, and then I get to actually get to, like, the real end, because I'm like, he wouldn't just leave it like that, and they didn't leave the story like that, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Huh. Very cool. Well, at least I know which games to go into prepared for more emotional gut punches now.
Exactly.
That's a good kind of spoiler. Sometimes you're not ready for it. But yeah, thank you, Jala, for putting up the prompt.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you would like to participate in these, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us that are exciting to us. Jala, what happened with this bad kid?
Well, this totally apparently unawares 6-year-old boy spent over $16,000 in the Apple App Store on Sonic Forces. Basically, his parents were working from home and his mom's iPad, which was linked to her credit card, was borrowed by this little boy. And he was using it in the other room while everybody was home. And anyway, the wife thought, you know, the mom thought that it was fraud and filed a claim with her credit card. But then eventually Apple told her that the purchases were legitimate and they wouldn't repay her because the payments were more than 60 days ago, since she thought it was a fraud.
Yeah.
And she filing the claim with the credit card company. And also they said because the parents failed to turn on their childproof settings on their apps and on their. And the family can no longer afford their mortgage.
Jesus Christ.
Because of the Sonic Forces in-app purchases of rings that this kid was buying. The lady says, it's like my 6-year-old was doing lines of cocaine and doing bigger and bigger hits. So when the kid found out, like when he was told what happened and how bad of a situation everything is from what he did, he offered to pay his mom back, which is sweet and about the only thing he could have said, but he makes like $4 a week for cleaning his room from her. How's he ever going to pay back $16,000? Yeah, so the lady is blaming Apple, and, you know, says, well, Apple should, you know, have these protections on automatically, which that's not how that works. But
yeah.
Anyway, Apple also said that she does get receipts of transactions emailed to her, so she should have also been paying attention to those, too. Like, I don't know. Every time I buy anything on the Apple App Store, it definitely sends me an email, and I definitely see how much money, you know, was sent.
They don't send receipts anymore.
They don't?
No.
Since when?
I don't get them, huh. But and they're not like being filtered out. I don't know. I just go, you know, when I'm reconciling my accounts, I can just go and look at the transaction list. But continue. Sorry.
Well, anyway, like that was the whole idea.
Yeah. So. That fucking sucks. And this is such a common story that, like, yes, put in the controls to let that happen, but also have a failsafe in case literally tens of thousands of dollars get spent on accident. Like, yeah, it's real money. And, you know, but like have a way to work with publishers who are fucking designing things for this anyway. You know, to like get people to spend their parents' money, to get children to spend their parents' money, like, you know, have a way to revert and do a refund. Like, it doesn't matter. You didn't find a whale. You found a kid who didn't know they were spending money.
Yeah.
And if your business model is, you know, we're just going to rely on enough of kids spending little enough of their parents' money that they don't notice and it'll be fine. That's a fucking shitty business model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. No, this is when it ruins a family financially. No, fuck that.
Yeah. And that's kind of like just kind of a PSA, guys. If you have kiddos.
Don't have kids. That's what I'm picking up.
Well, yeah.
Right, there you go. Well, anyway, for all of those listeners who are stuck and they already got kids.
Yeah.
Make sure to double check your child-proof settings on all of your devices.
For real.
But remember, capitalism works, guys.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a bummer. Hey, David, another bummer. Shit. What's going on with Cyberpunk?
Yeah, so OpenCritic has placed a notice on the PlayStation 4 and Xbox, the previous one, versions of the game that says, please note this game has significant disparities in performance, player experience, and review scores between the PC, next-gen consoles, Xbox One, and PS4 version, and goes on to say that OpenCritic and several other critics expect that these differences were intentionally hidden by CD Projekt Red.
Mm.
They then go on to lay out exactly why they believe that, you know, just the idea that they, you know, didn't release any versions for testing or for reviewers rather of the old generation.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Didn't allow people to use anything but pre-rendered gameplay footage in their reviews.
Yeah.
Just laying out the fact that this was probably intentional. And I guess it sounds like they don't 100% say this, but it sounds like this is maybe the first time they've ever actually done this.
Yeah. So I was curious about OpenCritic. It's like an independent Metacritic alternative.
Yeah, my understanding is its goal is to be Metacritic without being awful.
I mean, I don't know how you do that. It's just to be a review score aggregator. I had never heard about them before this story came through, but it still stands. They had not done any kind of warning like this on the product. Although, if somebody is looking and knows about Cyberpunk and is going to get it, I think that this is so inescapable in the news. I wonder if they would miss it anywhere. If they would miss the story, warning or not.
I don't know. I mean, when we consider the fact that, like, the joke is, you know, parents buying, you know, the similarly named game for their kids by mistake, I feel like, I mean, Greg, I think probably they were banking on the pre-orders, but I still feel like there's going to be a lot of uninformed people.
Yeah. I don't know how many of those are going to be going to OpenCritic, though.
True. Oh yeah. No, I don't think this is.
We have Cyberpunk at home, honey. The Cyberpunk at home. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think this will help anything. Like, the unalterable rule of America is that the consumer is screwed. But
well, yeah. House always wins.
Yeah. Also, apparently, the person who actually wrote this article has pointed out that apparently the story of Sony releasing refunds is not necessarily true. It sounds like it's more along the lines of, like, you can contact Sony's support and ask them and maybe they'll give you a refund.
Yeah, there's no, like, official process that's been started yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a mess.
So, yeah. Whole thing sucks, and hopefully they will be held accountable, but they won't.
Yeah, hopefully people get to play their game in some form or fashion.
Goddamn corpus.
I've got my story here. Oh God, that picture you shared in the Slack, David, the person keeping their the electrical fire waiting to happen. No, my story. So this past Friday, Thursday, something like that, was the Game Awards, and people watched that. And Last of Us 2 swept away, and a whole bunch of stuff was shown and announced. Not Elden Ring, and really nothing I was excited about more than a game. they announced a new version of a game that came out in 2019, and I am here for it. I am talking about the Final Cut version of Disco Elysium. They're releasing that in March of 2021. It's going to be coming out on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Steam, GOG, the App Store, Epic Game Store, Google Stadia. And then it's going to be coming out on Xbox platforms and the Nintendo Switch in summer of 2021. It will also be a free upgrade for anybody who owns the original on one of the platforms. I think it's only out on PC and maybe Mac right now. It'll be Disco Elysium, the game that you know and love. It's going to have full voice acting as opposed to partial voice acting, which is what it had before. And the voice acting they have is really, really good. And they are also adding new quests. They are adding new skills that you can incorporate, new gear and things like that. But yeah, like, this is going to be kind of the expanded version of the game. More dialogue. There's a whole new area you can go to. There are specific quests for the political ideologies that you can take on over the course of the game. And March of 2021 is about when I will be ready to play Disco Elysium again. not like I'm champing at the bit to play it right now. I'm champing at the bit to play it right now because it is a beautiful game. But yeah, I was most excited to see that this is what they're going to do. And more people are going to get to play it. Like, it's coming out of more systems. Like, I know so many people are waiting for it on the Switch and it can't get there for them fast enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my story. I'm excited. Ben. Oh God. So yeah. two bummers, no, something joyful, and then a weird one. Well, what are people doing with their Pokemon cards?
So this story is like tangential to what I want to talk about. It's basically just talking about like a new pattern in Twitch streamers opening up Pokemon cards or Magic cards on stream.
Okay.
But the thing that's interesting about it is people are spending like 10K or 20K per like to buy packs of these cards and open them up on stream. Yeah. So streamers are kind of rich, like the ones who have like thousands and thousands of people who watch them all the time that they can kind of do this when they want to. A lot of people will justify it as like content creation and like entertainment for the people who are watching, which, okay, that's fine, whatever. The thing that's like, oh, good.
No. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
A part where it gets kind of gray zoney is some streamers will do a thing where it's like they'll open up packs for other people on stream. So it's like people will be like, all right, I'll buy three packs, and then they'll open them up, and then like that's the cards that you get. But it like it feels weirdly close to like gambling for some reason.
It kind of does.
Yeah, it's new. Like it's I don't know how to classify it yet. You know what I mean? Like it's new, but yeah, I don't know. That's the thing. The actual story that I linked was somebody. I don't even want to say the streamer's name because I don't even care to promote people like that.
No.
Somebody who's like counter streaming and destroying all the cards that they open instead of doing it for collector reasons.
I mean, like if I was somebody who collected these, I would be happy because each one he destroys makes mine more valuable. That is still a bullshit way to spend money.
Isn't this just normal everyday, you know, conspicuous consumption?
Maybe. I don't know. Like, would you, man, do you make more than $5,000 on a stream where you destroy a card that you could sell for $5,000?
Oh, it doesn't matter if you do. It matters if the system can convince you that you might.
Maybe, yeah. Like, whatever. Like, people, you know, if somebody wants to watch somebody open packs of cards and see what they get, and they get a vicarious high from like, oh, mm-hmm. God, he got a rare, like that seems harmless to me. Like that just seems a step away from unboxing videos or whatever. But like if people are putting their own money in to get something out of it, that's weird.
Yeah. That's interesting. People are doing this with like beta Magic cards as well.
Wait a minute. Like beta Magic cards, like old ones? Like,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so again, this is people like spending, you know, X10K per pack to do this. I didn't know conspicuous consumption was a concept. Yes, it does seem like that, David.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's more like it's kind of bringing up the point that like streamers have enough money to do this type of thing, where it's like, okay, well, that's got to get clamped down eventually. Like,
yeah, well, like that just seems like a bubble to me. And also, like, shit, dude, you're not gonna be popular forever. Like, yeah, you know, like the train you're on is not going to always be leaving the station. Are you saving anything, dude?
Yeah,
this will get clamped down. The bubble will pop right after Amway dies.
Yeah, I don't know.
It does seem eerily similar to like professional athlete type careers, you know, where it's like you're in your entertainment prime for a couple of years into commentary later or something, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking specifically about like, you know, like people who make a lot of money because they're attractive, and that's reasonable, parasocial relationships, whatever, etc. down the line, that doesn't last forever. People don't stay good at games forever. The game that you're good at doesn't stay popular forever. Like, yeah. I am half really upset that people are wasting money that could go to good things. But I am also upset that like people are being really stupid with their money and they're going to regret it later.
Yeah. It's really weird. Like, I've been thinking about this more and more, like, cause like one thing I didn't realize too is a lot of Twitch streamers will have like editors that they pay professionally. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the live stream for like 8 hours a day, then they hand all that stuff off to their editor.
Oh, that's reasonable.
on YouTube.
Oh yeah, yeah. Editing sucks.
Go on.
No, I mean, it doesn't suck. I love doing it, but it's a very time-consuming process, and the skills of being an on-air personality are very different from being an editor, you know.
Yeah, the part where it's like you're becoming like a one person and like kind of like selling yourself in like different ways, it just seems really weird. Like it's going beyond just the realm of like simply entertaining people, you know.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. I'm not saying it's like good or bad, it's just weird to see this like formalization spring up.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna close this tab because it's giving me financial anxiety, actually.
which one, the Polygon one or the conspicuous consumption one?
No, I mean the Polygon one, but conspicuous consumption makes me angry too. Doesn't make me anxious, just makes me upset.
Am I the only one that like sometimes I'm kind of rooting for global warming, like I don't know, just sort of rooting for, you know, human extinction.
A lot of innocent people who didn't ask for this are gonna die, you know. Like they're just like innocent people who are not yet born, who didn't put a single atom of carbon into the air, who are gonna die choking on some dust that was once a river. So yeah. Yeah.
Can I share a tiny like happy story, even though I'm just cheating by sharing two stories?
No, go ahead, please.
Mackenzie Scott, Jeff Bezos' ex-wife, donated $4 billion like this year in like coronavirus relief and like to charities and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, $4 billion.
I'm giving a thumbs up right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully that made a difference. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get too much bummed out, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel like it's time for buttons. It's
probably, yeah. The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. It's been a good time, except in that part of the end where we contemplated the death of the world. Sorry, I've got a cat digging her claws into my leg, climbing up. Again? Yeah.
Sorry for contemplating the death of the world. I've got a cat.
Okay, she stopped the recording and now it's back, and now she's cowed.
Where did she stop it at?
She stopped it like literally right there while we were talking. So this has been an unmitigated disaster, but I hope it's okay I hope everybody's okay. A reminder, if you're listening to this weekend is Duckstream. Come hang out. It'll be a good time. We are doing 48 hours to support the Transactive Gender Project. I'm going to be playing Echo Knight Beyond. It's a good old survival horror game. Gonna be hanging out in chat with folks. Jala, on Sunday morning you are hopping on and playing the Colonel Sanders game, right?
I am playing I Love You, Colonel Sanders, a finger licking good dating simulator.
Yeah.
Yes. That is the thing that I am playing for 2 hours. So
it'll be a good time. We also have Jeremy hopping on and Gwendolyn. Is going to be hopping on to play some stuff as well. So it'll be a good time there that morning. And it'll be a fun party the whole time through. Otherwise, we're going to be back. It's looking like next week before Christmas, but we're going to be taking the week in between Christmas and New Year's off. We're going to take one of those off. It might as well be that one. So programming note there. Other stuff you can do, mostly let's just focus on Duckstream for right now. So duckfeed.tv/duckstream for all the details for that. And we look forward to seeing you there, even if you cannot donate monetarily. We understand shit is wild out there, especially when the government doesn't help. But your presence is wanted and valuable. You being there in the chat to cheer things on and make jokes makes things much better for us. So that is enough of a way to contribute just to the vibe to keep everybody going. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I'm David Maysmith. You can find me here.
Yeah.
I'm Jala Chan in Places.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
down titles because I wasn't going to have a repeat last week.
Same. I bet you all of us wrote at least one down.
What was last week's title?
Congratulations, Dennis and Jen.
Oh.
Yeah, I went heartwarming. I went sappy. So
nice.
I think we said that at some point during the episode. So Jala, since you said you wrote some down, what'd you write down?
My yeeter is broken.
Okay.
Dong slider.
Okay.
I know that's not going to be a title, but I had to write it down. Demon blood is a good moisturizer. And samurai choppy choppy.
Okay. Let's see here, Ben, what you got?
I just wrote down, God damn it, Dottie.
That's not going to be a title, but that's funny.
No.
That is like the theme of this entire episode.
It is. I apologize for anybody who was bothered by that. She's just been extremely extra today. I forgot about the decoy keyboard, so I'm going to try and make that happen. David, what you got?
I had a unmitigated disaster.
Also applicable.
disaster. I have cuts like steak, referring to the dongs. And then I have accidental joker. The one that made me laugh the most was demon blood is a good moisturizer.
I like my yeeter is broken.
Yeah.
We've had yeeter and dog slider.
Yeah. We've had two yeets.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's true.
So okay. I could throw one behind demon blood. I feel like, you know, that's the type of hard hitting life advice that today's
needs. It's good if you can find it. I don't want to be overbearing on the demon blood. God damn it, Dottie. That's a little, I don't know. I don't know about that one. Unmitigated disaster.
See, the yeet ones were never when I was on. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were never on the ones I was on. So this was my first yeet.
I like dong slider because it could be a food item and not just.
Yeah.
Well. That was a statement.
It could be a slight.
I'll go, okay, whatever. Demon blood, just do that one.
Okay. All right. Do that one.
That's my emotional involvement in this matter at this point.
I'm sorry.
I would like to go to sleep now.
Okay.
I'm sure you were too cool.
And I've got to go finish doing something for a recording tomorrow, and I've got to get some ketamine for this goddamn kitten. It's a lot. It's a lot, you guys. Sometimes
I like the laser routine of just like aiming it out the door and then shutting the door. But
she gets wise to it eventually. Her reluctance to leave the room
overrides.
It overrides the instinct to chase the dot. Same thing.
That's crazy.
I she knows that I'm going, that whenever I'm about to go to bed, doing my nighttime routine, that I'm about to lock her out of my bedroom. And she will not come out from under the bed unless I go to the other side of the house and shake a box of treats. And then she runs and eats those, and then I go to bed. So.
Oh, you don't let her sleep in your bed?
And she'll fucking tear me up, dude. She loves gnawing on my hands.
Maybe you deserve it. Maybe this is bad.
No, it was my fault for rescuing her from that goddamn barn. no, what she does is she gnaws on my hands. And then I don't know why, but she chews on my hair. And by chews on my hair, I mean bites big old hanks of it and pulls away at it while kneading her claws into my scalp.
Oh no.
Yeah. Which you can't let them do that. Like, you just have to discourage them, keep them away until they get past that phase. But yeah, it makes it really hard to, eventually she will get out of that aloe grooming phase, which is what she's trying to do. She's doing like rough play, because she perceives my hands as like other kittens that, from her litter. And she perceives my hair and my beard as her mom's fur. as the art, what the articles I've read have led me to believe, eventually she'll get out of that phase. But until then, I need to sleep without being eaten. Yeah, so that's I can't let her sleep, and that ruins things for Greta, because Greta likes sleeping at the feet of my bed. But you know, you can't let one cat in and keep another cat out.
Yeah, can't show favoritism.
This continues to support my theory that cats are just very tiny xenomorphs.
I mean, eventually, I mean, Greta is the chillest thing in the entire world. It's just that Dottie is a kitten, and kittens is kittens. All right, I'm not going to keep you guys here. Oh,
I got two questions.
Okay.
Are you going to have a Greta cam or a Dottie cam at the stream on the end?
I'm going to try to have one, yeah.
All right, and then are we going to do Among Us or any multiplayer game over the weekend?
Yeah. I will, basically, I'll get Among Us for you, Jala, and you, David. If you want to be around, I think Dennis has it.
He does.
Yeah.
Well, theoretically, as long as I can get rid of the crud, I will be at the thing on the Friday night. But then after that, on Saturday, I'm free whenever.
Okay. I'm not going on until Saturday morning during the day. Regardless, okay. I hope you get rid of your crud.
Yeah. Same, Cole. Same.
Yeah. But yeah, I'll send copies of Among Us out, just like I did for Phasmophobia. And if we want to, hang out and do that, and, I'll, share a link to the duck stream, Discord corner. Yeah. Cool. All right. I'm going to go, cause the cat's literally biting at me. Bye everybody. Feel better, Jala.
Have a good night week.
Later. Bye.